This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. This week featured bombshell testimony during the impeachment hearings in Washington. Many high-ranking witnesses called by the House Intelligence Committee confirmed allegations that Donald Trump and other top administration officials tried to exchange meetings and military aid to Ukraine for investigations into political rivals. But does that change anything for Donald Trump? And will it have any impact on the 2020 elections? Speaking of 2020, this week was another Democratic debate. Also, a new candidate in the crowded field, former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, and former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg might throw his hat in the ring as well. Political junkie Ken Rudin here to talk about the Democratic candidates, the debate, the impeachment, and much, much more. Hello, Ken.
Hi, Frank.
Well, that's all the time we have.
That introduction took care of everything, right?
Impeachment. Well, it did and it didn't. So many unanswered questions. I mean, here we are in impeachment. I think, let me get your take on this, because to me, the comparison between Watergate and this, Watergate was like a Dashiell Hammett novel. You know, it's dark. We don't know how it's going to turn out. Twists and turns, plot turns all the way around, and you never know how. This is more like Columbo. Right. I mean, we saw the thing happen in the first act. Everybody knows who did it and what it was. The question is, will the bumbling detective get the answer by the end of by the final act? I don't know.
Well, except for the one difference is that Columbo, usually the good guys win. There's no guarantee the good guys win here. And I keep thinking, I'm always drawn to comparisons to Watergate, but I was thinking of John Dean's testimony. People say, well, did Gordon Sondland or Fiona Hill or Vindman, was anybody a John Dean kind of witness? But even when you think of what John Dean had to say to the Senate Watergate Committee in June of 1973, there's a cancer on the presidency, Nixon was involved in the cover-up, and yet Nixon didn't leave office for 14 months later.
Right.
So given that the drama we got out of the Irvin hearings, it still was over a year later. And right now, as you say, I think we kind of know how this story will end up, though.
Well, we don't. We know how it began. I mean, the transcript has the answer in it, right? We've got the transcript of the phone call between the president and the president of Ukraine. There's your answer, right? There's the crime. But the question is, you know, will Republicans be successful in saying there's nothing wrong with what he did, or it happens all the time, or maybe impeach the credibility of the witnesses, which is the other attempt. But man, you've got some pretty high-ranking, high-profile, and highly decorated witnesses in this case that the Republicans will try and have tried to discredit.
But you say, will the Republicans be successful? What does that mean? Will they fend off an impeachment vote in the House? Probably not. Will they keep Trump in office after the Senate trial? Obviously. I mean, I think there's a done deal, given the fact that you need 20 Republicans to vote to convict and remove from office. And if you get three, that's going to be a lot. It was interesting that yesterday, during all these hearings going on, the Fiona Hill hearings, Donald Trump was having lunch at the White House with Mitt Romney and Susan Collins. Talk about trying to woo the jurors. But, I mean, these are the two biggest critics in the Senate of Donald Trump, and he's having lunch with them. So I don't know what successful means. If he's going to stay in, if he's going to get impeached, well, that's not good news for the president. But is he going to get convicted and thrown out by the Senate? That seems very, very unlikely unless everybody's waiting to see if John Bolton will testify. But
right.
Even if you think of, as you say, with all the people who have testified, all the drama we've heard, have any minds been changed? I think not.
Well, one other measure, we absolutely know what the Senate outcome is going to be. You're absolutely right. No change there. There will not be. The president will not be removed from office. But the question is political fallout. And what impact will it have on the president and his reelection chances, and also some candidates who are having to run? I mean, let's talk about that now. Tom Tillis, he's in a bind, right?
Well, he is, and perhaps more so than any. Well, there are several Republicans in a bind. Susan Collins likes to sell herself as an independent. She's a senator from Maine. But then when she voted for Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court, all the liberals said, wait a second, I thought you were one of us. Now, she was never one of them, but the Democrats are now looking at defeating her next year, which could very well happen. But Tom Tillis had a choice to make. When he was elected, when he beat Kay Hagan, I guess, 5-6 years ago, he seemed like a kind of an independent Republican, willing to, you know, to hear other sides. And at one point, he even voted against or was opposed to Donald Trump's national emergency to build the wall. But since the emergence of a conservative challenger in next year's primary, I mean, Tillis, more than almost any vulnerable Republican senator who's up for re-election, has locked himself, has binded himself with President Trump. There's absolutely no distance between them. That will help him in a Republican primary. But what happens in November when there are centrist and moderate voters and perhaps independent voters who will have their say, he's not going to win them over with his close association, an alliance with the president.
No, and I think that brings us to really the big question around these hearings. Again, not will the president be removed, but what about the opinion of those centrist voters about Donald Trump and anybody who would support Donald Trump? And in this case, in the state of North Carolina, you know, somebody like Tom Tillis. So let's take a look at the polls and how all of this affects Donald Trump. It's fascinating to me. A poll last week shows 70% of Americans said what he did was wrong, that he shouldn't have done that with the Ukraine president and hold up American public policy that has to do with our checking the Russians' influence, all of the implications around that for his own political personal gain. 70%. Then you say, well, should he be removed from office? You know, depending on the poll you look at, more or less 50% say, no, it was wrong, but no, he should still be president. What do you make of all this?
Well, it's what you just said is perfectly embodied by Will Hurd, the retiring congressman from Texas. He is one of the few Republicans who have stood up to Trump, basically criticized him on his foreign policy. He said that what he's done with Ukraine is inappropriate and misguided and things like that. And Democrats were hoping, well, if this is going to be a bipartisan verdict against the president, we, the Democrats, need Will Hurd to vote for him. But if you listen, vote with us. But if you heard what Hurd said yesterday, that yes, it was inappropriate what he did, and it's wrong, but is it impeachable? I don't think so. So if the Democrats can't get a Will Hurd to vote for them, then basically, you know, again, no minds are being changed, and ultimately it will have to be up to the voters, not the profiles and courage you're seeing in Congress.
Yeah, well, but again, it will reflect on the president, and because there is a presidential race. Wednesday, this is another fascinating poll to me. On Wednesday, a new poll comes out in Wisconsin from the Marquette Law School, showing the public opinion among Wisconsin registered voters is shifting away from impeachment and removal and support of Trump for president in 2020. Again, a shift in the other direction. It's not so much, it wouldn't be surprising if Wisconsin voters supported the president, but it's more support than previous polls in Wisconsin. So, I mean, what do you make of that? That trend.
What's going on? I'm glad you brought that up, because this is a great behind the scenes, under the cover stuff that the Republicans are doing. I'm not saying illegally or dishonest, but this is what they're doing. While the Democrats are eating each other up and basically looking for a savior among the, well, certainly the 10 in the debate, but the 18 or so who are running, and as you mentioned, Deval Patrick and maybe Michael Bloomberg joins that group, what Trump and his organization and his campaign reelection organizations are doing is that they're in these key states with Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania and Ohio and Iowa and North Carolina and Florida, doing what they can in social media, trying to make the case for Trump that even if he's not perfect, he's certainly better than what the Democrats have. So the, you know, the Democrats, the general election won't begin until the Democrats come up with a nominee. The Trump campaign is doing it right now in broad daylight in states, these key states that will determine the winner of next year's race.
Well, I do want to talk about how the Democrats will determine their nominee in the debates, but I want to stay with the impeachment for just one more question, and that is about what representatives, obviously the impeachment hearings just completed in the House, and now it goes on to the Judiciary Committee. But what stands out for you in these hearings among those representatives who have taken a lead in this, both Republican and Democrat?
Well, of course, we didn't see her testify, and we didn't hear from her much this week. But Nancy Pelosi did everything the right way. She was hesitant about supporting impeachment when the country was not in favor of it. She was trying to hold back the more aggressive liberals in her party to hold hearings. She waited for the right moment. I think she deserves a lot of credit. She also deserves a lot of credit for going to the Intelligence Committee instead of the Judiciary Committee. I'm not saying anything bad about Jerry Nadler, who was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, but I thought Adam Schiff did a tremendous job. job. There are other less known Democrats like Jim Himes of Connecticut who also did a very good job. On the Republican side, I think one of the big stars for the Republicans has turned out to be Elise Stefanik, the upstate New York Republican who had been a Trump critic, who, matter of fact, until Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was the youngest woman ever elected to the House in history. But she went from an independent, clearly an independent, to a very strong Trump defender. So if you're supportive of the president, if you think that this is a witch hunt created by Democrats and a corrupt media, you'll love what Elise Stefanik had to say, because she was always suspect from the true believers in the party. Now she's working arm-in-arm with Jim Jordan and Devin Nunes.
Jim Jordan, who was just put on this committee specifically for the impeachment hearings, right?
I know. And matter of fact, when he got into the committee so fast, he can't find his jacket. I feel so sad for him.
I think when that Buffalo Bill lost his helmet, I don't know what reference that is to. A political jig. Well, all right, so we said we were going to talk about the debates, the Democratic debate, and we will talk about that when we return. We're going to take a break right now. I'm talking with a political junkie on the state of things. We'll talk about the Democratic presidential debate and much, much more on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. This week's full schedule of impeachment hearings may have overshadowed the latest Democratic debate, but not for the political junkie Ken Rudin. No, sir. He's got a split screen on his TV. And Wednesday night, the 10 Democratic presidential candidates met. They debated on the stage. It was the fifth time. Ken Rudin, what'd you think?
Well, something you said split screen. I was thinking about it. Let me go back quickly to 1994. I was a big New York Knicks fan. The Knicks are in the championship, but on the same time, O.J. Simpson is being chased by the police. And I remember it being a split screen back then. But this was definitely a split screen moment, even though the impeachment hearings and the debate was at the same time. But I love these debates. People saying, look, nobody's watching, nobody's paying attention. We still have 2.5 months to go before Iowa. But there seems to be a new dynamic in the debates almost every time there's a debate. As you say, this was the fifth. And what strikes me the most, again, here we go again, is that Joe Biden, the national front runner, of course, it's not a national primary, but the national front runner, big lead among African-American voters, was the subject of attacks by the president and his people, Rudy Giuliani and others. And you'd think there's a lot of sympathy for the former vice president, and there should be. But then he gets into a debate, and it's not even nonplussed. He just is back to Joe Biden and the gaffes, talking about violence and women, how terrible he abhors violence against women, and then he advises everybody to keep punching, as if he didn't hear what he just said. And then he talks about that he has the endorsement of every African-American woman ever elected to the Senate, and Kamala Harris, who's standing two people away from him, says, excuse me, what about me? He makes these unforced errors, and you wonder how long is he going to be the national front runner, and if he doesn't survive Iowa and New Hampshire, what will voters in South Carolina think when it comes to them at the end of February? So,
well, it's interesting, too. I mean, just one knockout, just one of those primaries along the way, if he isn't the front runner, if he doesn't win it, he's in an interesting position, because people who say they support him mostly say, well, it's because he's got the best chance of winning. All he has to do is come in second in one of those, and that dynamic goes away, and then what's left?
Well, that's true. I mean, of course, in fairness, Bill Clinton didn't win Iowa. I mean, Iowa in 1992 was a favorite son, Tom Harkin. But he also lost in New Hampshire to Paul Tsongas. So he didn't win, in fact, until Georgia. But once he did win, he started winning everywhere. He was beating Paul Tsongas and Jerry Brown and the other candidates.
Yeah, I'm saying if your rationale is we're voting for him because he's the front runner and he stops being the front runner, then that's what you had going for you. That wasn't Bill Clinton's.
It sounds like Ed Muskie, if anything else, because everybody remembers Ed Muskie.
So who did?
It was only 1972.
That was before split screen, by the way. Ed Muskie.
It was before cable. My God.
Who stood out for you in that debate?
I'm sorry.
Who stood out for you?
Well,
in the debate?
Pete Buttigieg. I mean, I know he's a new front runner, the new darling in the Iowa polls, and he has a 9-point lead in the latest Des Moines Register poll. But he always, look, there are things that he should be concerned about. He doesn't have African-American support. He has a police incident back in South Bend that has alienated black voters. But every time he's asked, he's put on the spot, he answers a question, he always seems to be impressing me. He just, you know, it's, I mean, when people say, well, he's very scripted. Well, then clearly Joe Biden is not scripted. Mm-hmm. And Amy Klobuchar, who I'm a big fan of, I think she's very competent and does very well in the debates. She seemed like she was like in a sixth grade debate, and she was like nervous and almost trembling. So there are good performances, there are bad performances. God knows what Tulsi Gabbard is trying to accomplish other than attacking Hillary Clinton and other Democrats. But Buttigieg looked very good, very strong, and I think he had a very good performance.
What do these new candidates mean, and the possibility of Bloomberg anywhere in the race? What do you think about
that? Well, Bloomberg is fascinating, and of course, you know, he's a true billionaire. We don't know how much money Donald Trump has. We know Bloomberg is for real. And he always teases us every 4 years. He says, well, I'm really seriously thinking of running, and then he doesn't run. This time he stepped a little further. He's already qualified for the ballots, submitted petitions for the ballot, and for example, in Arkansas and Tennessee and Alabama. These are Super Tuesday states. He's also going on around on an apology tour saying, I'm sorry about my stop and frisk policy that, of course, alienated a lot of African Americans when he was mayor of New York City. But at the same time, he's already said if he's running, he's not going to go in New Hampshire or Iowa or Nevada or South Carolina. And it sounds like the old Rudy Giuliani strategy of 2008. By the time Super Tuesday comes along and Michael Bloomberg hasn't won anywhere, I'm wondering if people would have forgotten him. So I'm not sure exactly what he's trying to do.
Finally, you talk about scripted and unscripted. We saw Donald Trump's script, his handwritten notes, went viral on Wednesday. Short phrases that the president was going to deny no quid pro quo. What do you think?
Well, I also noticed, I looked at it, also has the storm of Hurricane Dorian approaching Alabama. It's the same magic marker he used. But he just says, everything he does, like when we did that insulting tweet when Marie Yovanovitch was testifying, why does he do that? Well, why does he do it?
41% of America thinks he's the guy.
So yeah, exactly. That's why, you know, his people will come out, and Democrats are hopeful their people will come out, and ultimately, I'm not so much who gets the most votes, but who gets the most electoral votes. Because it could very well be a repeat of 2020, 2016.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.